And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunas, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
I'm James. I wrote Code Switch.
James, you wrote Code Switch, but did you also know that there's a book that was written as well? It just came out.
I did know that, and I didn't write any of this.
I actually might be wrong. I don't remember if the book comes out like on Wednesday the 1st or if it's technically already out. All I know is that I have my subscriber copy because, you know, that's where I get my books. I subscribe on Paizo's website. And that book is called Galactic Ancestries.
Yeah, a lot of new and old and revised stuff in it, which is...
Yeah.
And also...
So I don't remember if I told you this, James, but you actually have a really Herculean task today on today's episode.
I do. I don't feel like Hercules.
That sucks to suck because unfortunately, you have the task of trying to stop me from talking nonstop about the new standardized ancestry feats mechanic so we can go over everything else in this book.
I did see that you were very hyped about that. And I think that I can see why you as a writer are excited by that.
Yeah, it is. Me as a writer very much enjoys when like new stuff and new mechanics come out and like it gives a really fresh way to play the game and enjoy the rules mechanics. And you know what? I've been following Pathfinder 2nd Edition for a very, very, very long time since before the OG Heck stuff. Mm-hmm. And this to me, this is like the first time since like the Advanced Player's Guide came out with like baseline, like general standard archetype feats in like the original archetypes. And I was like, whoa, mind blown. They did something really cool.
I mean, I can see how from a writer's perspective, this is great.
I'm so excited.
From a player's perspective, it is a good set of options and we'll get into it. But like it is something that I think is definitely more exciting if you are in tune with having to present options to people.
Oh my God, you're right. So just looking over at the stats really quick, this book starts by giving us information on each of the core ancestries. It's Android, Barathu, Human, Kasatha, Lashunta, Patra, Sheeran, Skittermander, Vesk, and Yosoki. And then there's also a list of legacy ancestries.
Yeah. Also, there's Ezal Goon on the cover.
Ezal Goon on the cover! I really like the ones they picked on the cover because you have a core ancestry in the Kasatha, you have a legacy ancestry in the Goblin, and then you just have little weirdos in the Ezal Goon and the Bantrid.
Well, Ezal Goon's a big weirdo, my big old Gumby boys.
Well, you're right, but do you know what's really funny? Mm-hmm. I never realized how big Bantrid are. For some reason, I always pictured them as being these little guys, but he's almost as tall as that Goblin.
Yeah, actually, I think they're standard like 4.5 to 5 feet.
I think you're right. I think they're like as big as people, like as humans, right?
Yeah, they're kind of like the Pokemon. What is that Pokemon that has? It looks like a nose. Is it Nosepass?
Nosepass.
Yeah, there's something similar, but it reminds me of that a lot.
Yeah. So when we're looking at the legacy ancestries, we're looking at dwarf, elf, gnome, goblin, halfling, leshy, and orc. And then the book introduces a ton of new ancestries. You want to go over that list, James?
Yeah, the new ancestry list is pretty extensive. It's not everything that you've seen from before, but that is totally fine. There are, let me see, 1, 2, 3 new species, right? Yeah, new species. Gifolian, I can't pronounce that. Fonkoigong, Madrosauri, and Talfi. As much as I like Talfi's name, actually Talfi was one real quick that I saw and was like, I hate this. This is a dromedary. This is a camel, but it's a mole. And then I saw the art and it's like, oh, this is street sharks, but they're moles. Okay, I get the art direction. I'm fine with this. You brought it around. You got me. You got me back in.
That is a sentence, man. I wonder how many like Gen Z and Gen Alpha people like listen to this and they're like, what's a street shark? And then they're gonna Google street sharks and they're just gonna see a 90s fever dream.
Yeah, it just has that attitude, you know, that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had. Yeah. Like in their mid run in the 90s and stuff.
Yeah.
And there are two versatile heritages. One that I feel like has been hinted at existing for a while, which is a xenometric android, which is, hey, you could just be any ancestry and you're an android. Cool. And then gap touched, which is like, I, it's like Space Charlie Kelly, where you're just like, I feel like I know how to do this and I have the competence, or I just forgot how to do this, but I'm still competent. And your entire being is based around being that.
It's way funnier than that. they're essentially Gap Cassandra, right? Yeah. Cassandra is an oracle from ancient Greece who like is cursed to know the future, but nobody will believe her. So if you read their thing, like every Gap touch knows something about the Gap and nobody believes them. like they're physically unable to believe them. It's yeah. great.
And they have some other like weird abilities that kind of play into that. And also just like yeah. being outside of time. Some favorites. Yeah, yeah. They got Izogun's Ijitkri, which are some of my favorites.
Yeah.
They got Trox, Riforians, you know, some a lot of the ones that I felt were missing.
Yeah, I love it. So if you had mentioned the Xenometric Android, those kind of existed in first edition. It was a alternate race like trait. Like you could swap android traits around to gain them. I wrote that and it was very exciting. I'm very excited to see it to being a versatile heritage here, just because it's like, oh yeah, make anybody a robot. Love it.
Yeah, yeah. And they still follow like the same like general life cycle of other androids, so they're yeah. not like totally foreign, which is very good, because I'm glad I didn't just throw that in there and re-explain some ancestry's lore just offhand without any context.
Yeah. I agree completely. So where do we want to start?
I mean, the book goes chronologically and that's easy, and I know you want to talk about the standardized suites.
I do. So let's talk about that first. Are you doing your thing where you're showing all the people who are watching us live on Twitch TV pictures from the book?
I am.
All right. Can you show them the picture on page 5? I really like this picture because basically it's a Skitter Goblin. Anybody who is a organized play fan will know that like the Skitter Goblin is kind of organized play's mascot, because it's a fusion of Skittermanders and goblins, and that's apparently canon now, because there's like an art of a little dude. He's great. He's wearing like his little red pinstripe blazer. He looks like he's hosting the book. He's my man.
Yeah, he looks like a Zoe imitator in a way.
Yeah. You know what I also really, really appreciated? On this same page, there is a box that says Ancestry Rarities. Are you familiar with how rarities worked in Pathfinder First Edition or Second Edition?
Yeah, I have an idea.
Yeah, the box says none of the entries in this book have designated rarities. While there are locations even in the multicultural pack worlds where one ancestry is dominant, adventurers of every ancestry can be found almost any settlement with significant population, excepting places that feature environmentals that are potentially hazardous to the species. I appreciate that. I don't like mechanics that say this option of being the person you are is like uncommon or rare or whatever. That just feels like, well, the point of me being an adventurer is that I'm weird and exceptional. Like, why are you doing this? I'm not a fan of that mechanic, and I'm happy to see this book just being like, let's not waste words on that.
Yeah, I mean, you could also just be that without a rule backing like there is in second edition of Pathfinder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, so the next section is standardized ancestry feats. And I've already mentioned all over social media and in the No Direction Discord server, which you should join if you haven't, and as well as here, that this is my favorite mechanic in the book, because it is truly a mechanic. It is something that, like, it is a rule that, like, touches on pretty much everything in the ancestry options. And the way that I'm going to describe this is, James, have you noticed that like in the Starfinder core rulebook that there are a lot of ancestry feats that just kind of overlap with each other?
Yeah, they're kind of like the same one, but with a different color on them.
Yeah, so this rule section calls all those feats standardized ancestry feats, and basically provides rules for ancestries to quickly have those just by saying the ancestry has this feat, here are the options you can select with it, and then it's done. And then so, theoretically, with this mechanic moving forward, assuming that Paizo uses this mechanic in every Starfinder thing going forward, there's just a giant list of ancestry feats that will not be needed to be reprinted over and over again. I am so excited for this. Yeah. I am so excited for this.
Yeah. And I do like that they added a fair amount of them to other existing ancestries just to bulk it out so that other people can see the benefit. But as I was looking at this, I was like, man, you save word count. It's like all this stuff that is writer focused.
Yeah, it's great. That's why I love it. You're right. I'm a dirty writer, and I see this as like writing shorthand of like just making sure that there are options that make sense. And I also like it because I'm going to tell you a secret. Like, I think that like a lot of just reprinting the same stuff over and over again, it's like 75% like this ancestry needs this and it makes sense. And it's like 25%, I don't know what else to put. I'm just going to put this. And now they're going to have to actually like make some more cool content for new ancestries. And I'm all about that. Like, don't give me a billion feats where like that are like, oh, you get these two cantrips and oh, it's great. Just give me the new ancestral cantrip standardized feat that says choose one cantrip from your ancestry's magic entry. You can cast that cantrip at will. A cantrip is heightened to a spell rank equal to half your level rounded up. That's just what I want. Something nice and easy where it can say ancestral cantrip, eldritch lance, and electric boogaloo, and then I'm done.
You know, there are, I did like that description. I did like that description.
Hell yeah. Also, you might want to note that timestamp because I totally cursed right there. I said, hell yeah. I did it again there.
No, that one's fine. That one you'll see on the Disney channel, but watch your language, mister.
All right, I'll do my best. So there are a good number of these in total. There's like over 20. Yeah, like between 20 just, and 30. Yeah, it's like 20 and 30. There's a good number. And they range in level starting at level 1 and go all the way up to 17. Creature shape at level 17 lets you transform into a specific kind of creature. But that's not the only one. So, like, when I look at this option list, I look at it and I'm like, oh, there's a lot of these things that, like, they could be backwards compatible into, like, other options for older ancestries and, like, Pathfinder and whatnot. Like a good mounts. Example. Like Mal, just you, your allies can ride you. That's so funny.
Also, when you combine that with the new versatile heritage for the Android, where you can change your size to large, you can now be a mount because you chose a different species to be an Android of.
Are you telling me that I can be like a Transformers Beast Wars mount? Go
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't That's even need amazing. To be an Azalgun. I mean, Azalguns are always large, but you could be like,
yeah.
You could be a medium creature, just make your be a large android version of it, and then have a gnome ride you.
It's beautiful. Like another good example is like there's like a set of options for flying. And so like it's like, okay, if your ancestry were like you have wings and you should be able to fly, instead of saying like here's three of these giant lengthy feats that explain the flight rules over and over and over again, now it'll just say here are these three feats you can take. I love this mechanic. In a similar vein, there is a section that talks about lesser unarmed strikes. They're less standard unarmed strikes. Like, you know, everybody has like their fists and jaws are pretty common too. This list has things like beaks and claws and fangs and a spit and a stinger and a tail and a talon. And it just has the damage dice and all of the traits for them. Just pre-written. There you go. Reference it.
Yeah. And how does increase in size work? Size, actually, that doesn't change damage, does it, necessarily, in this game?
Size doesn't really have many game mechanical effects other than the size of the square you are taking up.
Yeah. And I guess for flanking that way, but yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a big fan of this. I love this section so much.
Yeah. I mean, it is just convenient. it also allows when they if you look in the vests section, vests get a lot of these.
Yeah, they do. It's very good. Since it sounds like you want to talk about like core ancestries, can I get you to casually show the art on page 12? This is my favorite piece of art in this whole book. You'll understand why as soon as you see it.
The educator likes the educating.
Oh, I do. Look at the little vest girl in a little pink tutu with a bow on her head. It's so great. Also, she's kind of a jerk because Kasatha, like, culturally don't like their mouths showing, and she's trying to force that poor little Kasatha to take their, like, scarf off their face.
I'm just looking at what is that a flying paper plane that looks like a drone?
It's someone made a paper spaceship instead of a paper plane.
Airplane. Oh, yeah. That's just way extra.
And I think, I'm not 100% sure, don't quote me on that, but judging by the shape, I think that might be a paper version of the iconic spaceship that they use as their spaceship.
Oh, that would track.
Yeah. Now, granted, I don't think this is supposed to be the iconics because, I mean, like, I don't know. It just doesn't look right to me. There's also no Navasi there, and that doesn't look like Day in the front row with their head down asleep. Yeah. I also think it's really funny that the little kid Sheeran are those larvae in the jar at the
bottom. Yeah.
Like this is so good. Like, this is so good. It's such a good piece. And then the Barathu teacher is just like, I'm not. And if you look on the blackboard, he's teaching them how an Astrozoan's shapeshifting works, is what that is.
Oh. I didn't even look that far. Wow.
Yeah. No, I love this piece. Every time you look at it, there are more little details. Whoever did this knows the Starfinder lore really well and did a great job. I love the fact that that Kasatha kid is just wearing like regular human kicks. Like, look at that. And
he just got the J's.
Yeah, and I don't think the artist intended this, but that outfit that the Ahsoka is wearing looks exactly like Stuart Little to me.
It also looks like Caillou.
It does.
Like color inverted, but it looks like Caillou.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. Starfinder developer Dustin Knight is in chat saying that I am correct, and that is the Nova Rush spaceship.
Oh, okay.
Which is awesome. Yeah, I love that art. It is my favorite. Then from there, there's like a little entry that talks about each of the like core ancestries. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I like is that they describe what it means to be core in like a little box at the front page. And it says these 10 ancestries represent a small portion of the population of the pack worlds. While they're meant to provide standard ancestries for players to choose from, they aren't necessarily the most prevalent or even the most populous people in the galaxies. Their designation of core is a game terminology meant to express Starfinder's focus for convenience of our players. No organization in the pack worlds would group these 10 ancestries together in any kind of special category.
I mean,
I appreciate that.
That's one of those things. Where it's like, again, I don't need rules for this, but I guess some people do.
Listen, some people just need it spelled out, and I respect that, and I appreciate when space is given to do that. Yeah,
it's like if you were to take an average human and go, most people are Asian. It's like, yeah, you're right, but like,
yeah,
like if you took like a random sampling, but you know.
Yeah. If a completely objective sampling of the entire planet, yeah. So. Typically when you and I would do something like this review, James, we would each pick a couple options in each category and just like go wild with it. Mm-hmm. Which ones are you thinking you want to talk about of these 10? Because like my prediction is that you'll want to talk about Vesk and Android and maybe one other one, maybe human.
Of the core, I looked at, it gave more of a look at Vesk and Android.
I'm
pretty basic.
I know what you like, you know, I get you. But like, so the thing is like, I think we should start with Android, because like when I read through this option book, I was like, yo, get out of James's head.
Yeah, there's we have a couple options for how your Android fits into the world. They have a biotech heritage, which is, you know, you're kind of living, kind of not, in addition to having a living soul. Electronica, which is like I wanted to say Depeche Mode, but that's the wrong one, but it makes me think of just like techno music androids. Hellforged androids, which they have art for, which is sick. The art is sick. I don't like them, but the art is sick.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And the last option of that was Replicant, which is just a copy, which is your Blade Runner, and yeah. Void Core, which is your scary one. You know, elder beings. Do have one of the biotech one options of arts as well. So just to kind of let you go wild if you wanted to go more towards a robotic looking android. I feel like maybe there is a split in if you want a android that looks like a thing, like a regular species being, to go to the versatile heritage instead of the android. Which, you know, it's a choice. It's not the choice I would make, but I like that there's the options for it for people that want to. I think just being Android base and flavoring it was enough, but that's me. They got a lot of similar stuff before they get the versatile ones that you were talking about, the standardized ones, sorry.
Yeah, there's a list for all of the core ancestries of standardized ancestry feats that they can do.
Yep, and it's relatively wide. You got cantrips, ancestral dark vision, which is something that they used to have base. ancestral skills, internal compartment, which also used to have base. Linguistic prodigy, unconventional weaponry, and then they also go over ancestral magic, and there's different spells at that. So
yeah.
A fair amount of things just based off music, repair, skin, tools. So just kind of like filling out the android fantasy and lore. And yeah, this like once again, I just the art helps you really just figure out what they're talking about. Like this Zenyatta looking guy.
Yeah, definitely the Zenyatta looking one. I saw all of the music ones and I was like, James would love this. He has a music android.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think the music android would, the one that I played, would fit into that electronica one.
No?
No, I think it's more standard.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's when I see heritages of androids, I feel like those are ones that are specifically made to do something. Not one that is made and then finds something to do.
Makes sense, yeah.
So.
Now, I'm going to skip for my first ones. I actually did want to talk about human. This is my most basic choice. One of the things I really like about the human ancestry is, like, they kind of took a look at some of the options in first edition that were basically humans, but, like, on different planets with different colored skin. And they were like, these are all basically just humans. Let's put these together just because that way we'll support more of them with options and, like, whatnot. So a good example is that under human, the Demai human, humans that are native to the planet of Demai, where like kaiju stomp around, the Demai are formally classified as being humans now rather than being like their own ancestry group.
Yeah, when we looked at them before and went, those are just people.
Yeah, those. And then the other one is the Hyleki human, which is the red skinned natives of Akaton. So like those to me are the two where I was like, oh, this is great. There's a couple that like this, there's Sunkissed, which is like you're from the burning archipelago on the sun, and a couple other ones. But I just like this idea that we have space now to make humans from different planets with different like cultures and stuff, just because now we're willing to acknowledge and expand like, oh, this can just be a heritage that they get. You're from Demai. That makes sense.
Yeah. Like your cultural adaptation is to that.
Yeah. I think that there is the argument that you could make that like one heritage for an entire planet is a little like, and I kind of agree with that, but I also just like the Demai not being classified as their own ancestry they never really were.
Also, sometimes when you get into the development of it, sometimes planets are their own ecosystem, right? Like in Demai, everybody lives underground.
Yeah. You know, I was really kind of annoyed about the Sandcat Patra for being its own thing, because it's like your ancestry is that you're small, and I was like, oh, I don't like that. I would like a bunch of them that are from all over the place. But you know what, like since I had made those comments, I've like thought about it, and I was like, you know, it's pretty common in for like a lot of sci-fi lore for like one planet, one culture, you know, this is the thing. I'm thinking of like the planet Mars in Iron-Blooded Orphans, where like it's an entire planet, but like they all kind of do have one culture.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like it's a monoculture of suffering.
Yeah. That's accurate. Mm-hmm. So I really like I like that in general. There's not really a whole lot of options that are like you have to be a Demai human to take this. There's one for Hyleki, it's called Gentle Boost, and then there's like Hey Buddy for Demai, but like for the most part they don't care a ton about which ancestry you are, which feels very appropriate for humans to me.
It feels very human. The design is very human.
Yeah, I love it. Did you want to talk about Vesk next?
Yeah, the Vesk has maybe the best art of any of the core species, and probably all of them.
Yeah, that's fair.
They went hard on really showing you the fiction of being a dinosaur man or a dinosaur being. They introduced, what is it, five new heritages. Forked tongues, which are just poison dinosaurs. Frilled Vesk, which I thought of as crocodile things, but the art for that is much different.
Did you see the art on page 76 where the guy is using a club made of his own tail that he ripped off?
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Look, the other ones are great, and I know the references for them too. They're amazing. Horizon Seeker, which is getting the most out of your tail, but not like with your tail, like that image.
Yeah.
Enshrined Vesk, you're the soul of a dead Vesk preserved hero or trapped inside a living stone statue sculpted in your likeness. That's amazing. Construct. That is so, and Wavecrested. Wavecrested is the one that I got mixed up with Frilled there.
That's so good.
Yeah. So the art for the Frilled, or Wavecrested, sorry, is this.
It's the axolotl Vesk.
I saw that art when I was like just going through initially and was like, oh, that's a thing, not a Vesk. And then it's like, oh, that is a Vesk.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So we're really going. And then this one, not this is just any Vesk, but remember the Super Mario Brothers movie? Remember the Goombas?
Yeah.
This is one of the Koopa Troopas from the Super Mario Brothers movie.
It really is.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot. They flesh them out. You can to do more of the like poison stuff to get a little bit more of the unique ancestries here. A lot of the feats are for them, but in general, there's not too many unique ones because they're all for those specific bloodlines, pretty much. And then they get a long list of standardized ancestry feats, cantrip, skills, unarmed strike. Even internal compartment spells. They get a huge list and natural attack. So there's a lot to do with Vesk, and they really expanded their range to kind of, I really blow it out of that scary dinosaur Obazaya person.
Yeah.
And just either make it go like Grimdark, where you're a statue inhabiting your own body, or Girly Pop, where you're the axolotl.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a large axolotl, by the way.
That's so funny.
Medium. Sorry, it's a medium axolotl. That means
the size of you.
Yeah, very big.
It's so good. So I think the one that I wanna I've got a couple things where like, so the first one, I the Skittermanders are like Skittermanders, right? Mm-hmm. So like they've got like one for if you like fidgeting with things. One of the funny ones is if you're a grumpy Skittermander, it's literally called the Grumpy Skittermander Heritage. It's hilarious. you're good at intimidating people because everyone expects you to be happy, and you're essentially that grumpy troll in the Trolls movie, Branch.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen that movie.
Really? You have a daughter?
Yeah, who was like zero when it came out.
Oh, that's fair. So if you want to flip over to page 42, the Grumpy Skittermander art is great. There's a common Paizo trope of I've seen, and this is exactly what it is. Like, he's such a guy. Look at that little man. But I want to talk about, so my thing is like, the last couple ones, like the mechanics are fine and I like them, but it's the art. For the Patra, the thing that I thought was really funny is that there is an entire ancestry about having a mental bond with a symbiotic ooze. And every time I hear about that, I just think of our friend's obsession with like the ooze morph. And that makes me laugh. It literally says your body secretes a slime that protects your coat, keeping it slippery and shiny. You gain resistance to acid damage equal to half your level and a +2 circumstance bonus to reflex saves to avoid being engulfed by creatures and on checks to escape after being engulfed. That's just funny. Huh. There's a lot for Patra. Like, they get like one of their options is called land feet first, where you always land on your feet essentially. Mm-hmm. It gives you like acrobatics bonus, the cat fall skill feet for free, and it's funny. They also have a really big list of ancestry feats. Most of them are natural weapons, like different types of like ancestral unarmed strikes that they have. So they can pick from claws, they can pick from jaws, they can talk to cats, they can have a prehensile tail, they can transform into a cat as a 5th level ancestry feat. Like, there's just a lot of good stuff. I like it. There's a lot of Caterwaul stuff, like building on the feat chain from the original book. There's this really happy looking Patra on page 36 who's got like a blitz ball, and I guess he's like one of the doom ball players from the game, and I like that. It's good. But if I want to talk about the ancestry that I actually like want to talk about, because I like their mechanics, because like I said, all that stuff is fine. I actually really like the Yasoki stuff. I thought the Yasoki, they did a really good job. I like the look at, because like one of the things that Yasoki kind of had in first edition but wasn't expanded on a whole ton is this idea that there are a whole bunch of technically different biological species that all call themselves Yasoki because the ones in the pack worlds got so big and so famous, everyone was like, I'll just tell them that. It's the equivalent of, I live in Easton, but I'm going to say I'm from Philadelphia because you'll know where that is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I like that. I just think it's really cool from like a lore perspective. And I like it talking about like, there's a lot of like use of like a Yasoki can get a job just letting people experiment on them as like a lab rat, which is funny. Like, okay. Like, I guess as long as it's consensual. And like, so one of the options is literally called test subject Yasoki. where you get to choose. It's like a heritage where you choose from a whole bunch of different like sub options for it. So like one of them is you could have extra limbs, giving you four arms like a Kasatha. You could have psychic powers because you have a cranial transmitter installed into your head. You could be biologically infused with cybernetic augmentations, or if you're feeling extra spicy, literally, you could just be radioactive.
where's the option that lets me flowers for Algernon myself?
I think we need that. My favorite art for the Ahsoki is on page 52, where one of them is playing a Nintendo Switch. It looks like a teenager with like little, it reminds me of the Mitchells versus the Machines, if you've ever seen that movie. Mm-hmm. And it's a Netflix movie where like a college age girl and her family are the last humans that haven't been captured by robots that want to take over the planet and send all the humans into the sun so that they can have the planet. Oh. And they do a lot of like Spider-Verse style animation where they do like comic book stuff, but instead of being like comic book wapow, it's like her scrapbooking stickers all over the screen, and that's what this reminds me of.
Oh yeah, that's probably what the influence is then. Yeah,
I was a big fan of that. So the next section in the book talks about legacy races. There's not as many of them because this is mostly legacy ancestries. I said races, but it's mostly ancestries that were core or in the Advanced Player's Guide of Pathfinder first edition and second edition that are not core here, if that makes sense.
Yeah. They're just from Lost Galarian.
All right. That's for this one, the list is much smaller. There's only like seven or eight of them. Do you want to each pick one?
Sure. I'll pick the orc.
All right. I know you got big feelings about the orc. Take it away.
I spent about 20 minutes down a Google hole trying to find out if there was a piece of media that I missed about the orc, because they, from Starfinder First Edition, the orcs that I know are on Apostay and not very happy in general. The entry for the orcs for their social society and all that doesn't really mention Apostay at all. It mentions them being trying to follow in the footsteps of Torag. And I saw that, and I was like, that has to be a misprint. And I looked further, and it's like, no, it's here multiple times. So the standard prototypical orc in second edition is kin with dwarves. Yeah. And they're buddies. They hang out.
Yeah.
They live in Star Citadels together.
Well, I mean, it's a very one-sided relationship because the dwarf entry doesn't talk about orcs at all.
It talks about them once, but the orc entry talks about dwarves a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And there is still the Apostay orc versatile, or not versatile, but the heritage for them. In addition to like, there's orcs other places, but there's not that many of them. So it is an orc play. So me and Alex were talking about this earlier, and he's like, there's nothing that says it. It's like, there's a lot of media that we might not have seen at this point that maybe explains some of this.
We'll have to find those adventures and see if we can learn a bit from them.
Yeah.
If I had to imagine, it's probably because the original orc entry in first edition is kind of eugenicsy. Like, it talks a lot about most of the ancestry being enslaved by drow and like how they're like genetically bred to be like ideal like slaves essentially for drow. So like this seems to like this act, there's a couple places where it acknowledges that some of those exist, but it kind of recenters orcish heritage and lineage on like this drow dwarf relationship, which I imagine is likely I feel like it's something that definitely could have been in first edition that just was never really touched on because we didn't get a ton of lore about the dwarves and what they were doing or their star citadels or anything like that. So it doesn't feel like a total retcon to me, but it does feel like it's kind of out of the blue from somebody who doesn't have that like Starfinder background. Like, cause I mean, we haven't looked at organized play for all the stories and scenarios there, but like, yeah, you had a child. But like, we also have reviewed every hardcover book that has come out ever. So like this is, I think that maybe this should have been in the Galaxy Guide. Man, oh man, I would have loved if it was in Galaxy Guide and that actually told me things about the lore and wasn't just like a signs for like what to do. But I already said my piece of that episode. Go check it out if you want to know more about what James and I think about Galaxy Guide.
Yeah, so besides that blindsided, orcs are cool. They get a lot of stuff that's like about overcoming stuff, and also orc dwarfs. Here's the image, an orc dwarf. Because I guess they live together, they got to use the same stuff. That just looks silly. I mean, they link them by the quest for Sky as being like, hey, they're from kind of the same place, and they both kind of like fighting, and they both find honor in Torag, who's still out there doing stuff. So, like, it's not the wildest thing, but it is just like, I got blindsided by it. I was like, what's happening here?
Yeah, I feel that. So my pick is going to be halflings, but I want to do an honorable mention to the elves. Specifically, I like that this book has the Asvenarian elf as one of its heritages. And Asvenarian elves are kind of like Pathfinder or Starfinder second editions, not drow is the best way to put it. So for those of you who were not around for the event of the great Wizards of the Coast attempting to seize control over the OGL, basically there was a lot of concern about what types of like words and lore that were made available to writers everywhere through the open gaming license, and like whether or not Wizards of the Coast in the future would attempt to use a lot of that terminology to sort of like play gotcha, now you owe us money because we're going to rewrite the terms of our agreement. Like, they have tried now twice to do that, and it definitely seems like they were like, well, using the word drow is definitely something that maybe they could pull a gotcha on us for, so let's move away from it. So there's a new word, it's Azuranian elf. If you know drow, it's drow. That's fine. Cool. Honorable mention. But if we want to talk about the halflings, I like the halfling stuff. Their art is pretty cool in this. I was looking through the books, and if you look at the art on page 72, that is the same character that is the iconic art piece for the halfling in the Legacy Ancestry section in the core rule book of Starfinder First Edition. She's just older and looks a lot more less happy and like, and
looks a lot more like, grizzled.
She looks a lot more grizzled, yeah. Her armor is dirtier. It's been beat up and up to scratch. She, like, looks older. She's got a couple scars on her faces. Just like me, for real, for real. I like it. But then, like, you scroll down a little bit, and the other is, like, this halfling guy who's pouring coffee into a strawberry mug, looking just so cheerful and happy. I love that for you, man. And when we talk about different types of options that they have, there's things like Duck Sneak, Caravan Cousin, and Quarterling, which is really funny, heritage options. Quarterling is like you've adopted cultures and habits of other ancestries around you. And so I imagine that you're Quarterling because like you're a little bit more of them and you don't present yourself quite as much. You get the adopted ancestry feat, which is pretty cool. And they have a smaller list of ancestry feats than the Vesk, because the Vesk have like a paragraph and this is like a couple sentences. But there's just a lot of really cool little references to Starfinder's history and things that make a lot of sense. A good example is if you remember from the one halfling adventure in first edition organized play, one of the things that they established was that halflings don't really like augmenting their body as like a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. And there is a feat called At Home in My Body, which the prerequisite is you have no augmentations that count against your augmentation limit.
Mm.
Yeah, and so you get benefits for like, you basically gain the assurance feat for one skill that you're trained in each day, which assurance is basically the ability to take 10 is what it is. Mm-hmm. So every day you could just pick one, and it's a flexible assurance feat if you have no augmentation. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite the trade-off, but yeah, if you're,
it is a huge trade-off. I do like Lucky as a Squawks as a feat name. That's fun. And Scurry to Safety is funny. It reminds me of, there's a goblin feat with a similar name that's really, really funny. It's like called like Scamper or something like that. And that's good.
Mm.
Yeah. And obviously Leshies are here too, because Leshies are very popular. They ain't for me, but for all of you who love Leshies, they got you.
I mean, Leshies exist here and they're fine, but like Raxalites are, I feel like, the funnier Leshy.
Yo, Raxalites are in this book, and starting in the next section, it's titled New Ancestries. Yo.
Yeah, I didn't get to do a hard look at them, but Raxalites are cool.
Yeah, go to page 84 for a second. 84's art is really funny. What do you think it's like to punch teeth out of a coral monster?
Oh god, 84. I guess the teeth is just what you use to choose food.
Right, but you see his face? Look, he punched him, and there's like bits of his coral that have flown off.
Yeah. I just think that'd be bad for your knuckles.
Yeah, definitely. If you look at the background of this diner, the first thing I see is these Brunieri who are like, they seem like they're watching with interest. But the other thing is, these must be children, because like a Brunieri is supposed to be like 4 to 5 feet tall. Mm. So like, I think these are children Brunieri watching. I think it's way funnier.
They could be adults, because there's an Izalgun that looks normal sized behind that bar. So the chairs might be Izalgun sized when they're large.
That's fair. Actually, that's a really good point. My question, look at his expression. Look at that Izalgun's expression.
he looks like Hypnoto, just...
He just looks like he's seen this before, and he is done. I also love the burger that has, like, the eyeballs sticking out of it at the bottom.
You make me stop because you keep swearing.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm cursing a lot. I curse when I get excited, fam.
And you got the burger there. Yep. The nasty patty, yeah.
The nasty patty. All right, so... Why don't we pick a few from this page that we want to talk about? We have some time. We're making really good time on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're doing fine. I mean, yeah. I there's Ijikri here, so I looked at Ijikri.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
And he's all good.
That is a great one. I just went with my last pick, so why don't you pick one to talk about first?
Sure. Actually, I'll look at a new one, because there's four new ones, three new ones.
Yeah.
The Madrasarai. Which I looked at and was like, oh, I definitely know which one of my players are going to pick that one. Because it is just edgy as all get out.
Yeah.
Let's bring it up here. Madrasarai. The options are too long. It takes too long to scroll through. It's too buttery.
Well, they made this as long as like an ancestry entry in the core rulebook. Like, there's a lot of content for these new ones.
Yeah.
Like, we kind of went through the other ones pretty quickly. But these ones, like, you got lots of content here.
So this is what their base form kind of looks like. They're kind of just like milky white, and then their blood changes color, and that gives them what color they look like. But all their art is edgy as heck. It's so edgy. It's infinite edge.
Like, but edgy is your favorite, right?
It's not my favorite, but it's definitely some of my players' favorite.
That's funny.
They have there's a 17th level feat that gets traded around between certain ancestries that basically lets you come back from the dead. And they get one of those, but you do that by devoting yourself to somebody or something.
Oh my God.
Another single living, willing creature. And you go away, you disappear, and then a month later, you return. You come back within 30 feet of that person.
Wait, so what's the name of this ancestry?
You're going to make me say it again. Madrasarai. Madrasarai.
M-A?
M-A-D-R-O-S-A-R.
Oh, they're these ones that look like they're like Zonkuthanian guys.
They're from Kazmurg's Absurdity, and they're very big on tamping down emotions and not being too expressive.
I see.
And that should be reserved for big, important things. And they seem pretty out there as far as, like, how do you exist like this? But also demons. You know, I guess that also does it too.
I think it's really funny that they're this big edgy race in terms of like their lore, but all of their heritages are basically on which bright happy color they have blood they have.
Yeah, and also that they hate demons. They're kind of like the old cat folk in that way. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, just demons all the time.
Yeah.
So their art's really cool. They have a ninth level feat that's absorb magic. Yeah, so you attempt to absorb magic of an incoming spell into your blood. You attempt a counteract check against the triggering effect, your counteract rank, yada yada. If you counteract the effect, you end the effect for all other creatures in the area, but you become drain one for 10 minutes. But you can do that once an hour. So an arcane spell comes near you, a fireball. You counteract it. You absorb that fireball.
Oh, I wonder if it's spicy. Do you think it's like doing the salsa challenge that we did way back in like last December as like an episode where we did the hot challenge?
Oh, I mean, that's it's probably way more, right? It's probably
it has to be. I mean we survived our thing. Like, I imagine fireball is a lot harder.
Yeah, I mean, I did the cinnamon challenge as a child and I felt that was harder.
That's fair. So you said that absorb magic is a feat that you like. What was your favorite option for this new Madrasarai?
I mean, that was ancestry. I looked at the feats because, like, there's all these heritages, and I was like, yeah, I don't know what a base heritage is, so I kind of just like ran off that. But just looking through the feats, it was that and the weird way in which they get that 17th level feat to come back from the dead, because it's shared by a couple other ancestries in this book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they do it in a specifically weird way, which is I think super interesting.
Yeah. So I'm going to pick a one that is returning for my first pick. It's actually funny, is if you literally scroll one page down, mine is the Marikoi. I was not a big fan. I saw
that
art
and knew that that was going to be yours.
I know. I love casual art where they just show like fantasy people being just. Oh God, I can't even curse. I have fantasy people being people. And so we look at 144 and you just have this Marikoi gamer wearing purple and just sitting there looking like he's, you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of that kid from the movie with like the power glove. It's bad. Like this, this Marikoi stands the power glove is my thought for this guy on this art. I love him so much, but I'm glad that like I had that reaction because like the options for the Marikoi are pretty cool. One of the things I think is really neat is like the Marikoi have traditionally had this ability where like their skin is how they perceive like sound instead of being like their ears. Mm-hmm. So for them, it just talks about how like your hearing is an imprecise feat with a range of 30. So like you know if people are within 30 feet, but like I think that's really fascinating to have that like put out there, because you got to figure like if their ears are just kind of vestigial and they don't hear regularly, like how different is that to have your, you really can't hear anything past like 30 feet from you. We don't, like that's an experience that we kind of take for granted, you know what I mean?
Yeah that's very different.
Then I also really thought that the Rovashi Marikoi was really interesting as like a heritage. So you have like the royal talent to draw upon the knowledge of thousands of Marikoi ancestors for advice and guidance. So you get like a lot of these religious benefits, and you get the special action called Tap Wellspring, where once every hour you can basically roll a religion check to recall knowledge on any topic by asking your ancestors.
God, like, I love what's that. My password?
No, grandma, what's my password? I love that. And they just have like a lot of really fun feats that are like partially based on their anatomy. Like you have the balancing tail feat, which lets you use your tail for balancing, makes it harder to trip you and whatnot. But then you also get stuff like improved construction, where you are really good at like using whatever's around you to make tools. It just gives you the barricade feat for free, and you can use a barricade, like your barricades last longer than the typical
feat. I had somebody use barricade last society scenario I ran.
Yo, tell them to be one of these guys, these Kim Possible monkey ninja guy looking people. I also was a big fan of the hunter, not the hunted, just as the name of a feat. That's fun. I like that. I like, you can't teach speed, and the ancestral wellspring overflows. So like, I don't know if whoever wrote this was intending to make them sound like they were all like mildly Chinese Monkey King inspired, like, oh, names, like
Kong? Yeah,
100%. Yeah, they all feel like, you know, like little like proverbs like that, and I really appreciated that like little bit of flair. It was enough for me, for somebody who's like mildly familiar with it, to appreciate it. But it's not like I don't read this and say, oh, this is like a Chinese ancestry. Like, it doesn't feel like that. It just feels like it's got a couple of like a little bit of garnish on top, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah I get you.
Which one do you want to talk about next?
Ajikris.
Yo, the squid billy!
They do so much to make them seem like productive members of society, when I just want them to be the worst. I want to make them bad.
When we played, our friend ran Signal of Screams, and actually my next pick is going to be Bernari, because of my experience in Signal of Screams with my Bernaris, and James ran an Ishtikri that you could really only describe them one way, yeah?
Yeah, it was a hillbilly squid. It was a squidbilly.
It was great. I love them. I love that character. It was so great. And then I did not figure out until like the very end the truth of that character. It was so good.
Yeah. The Ajikri get dark vision to start with, which once it's weird that other species don't get it. They also get mantle. So they get resistance to persistent damage. So they really leaned into the armor squid, stone squid kind of lore behind them. They have seven eyes. And they are not amphibious, even though they're squids. Also, every Ajikri you see is the adult version of an Ajikri, because they go through like three or four other stages ahead of time.
Just like Zoidberg.
In fact, they die like Zoidberg when they reproduce, if they choose to, which is the majority of choice, where, you know, they're just like, yeah, cool, I'm ready to have 1,000 babies and die. and then they become a drift balloon and die. It's great. I love it. They get a lot of options that give them like either letting them return to the water and do more aquatic things, making their mantle harder, letting them go through like wetlands and tide pools better. Because I feel like for squid people, they weren't really adapted to squid stuff. And I think that threw people off. When I thought that was the funniest part about them is they were like tree squids. yeah. But they did give them more squid things, which is fine. And a lot of their options are squid options, like shearing beak, where you get a beak that goes through, there gives extra damage in the backstabber category. You get jet, yeah. which allows you to jet. I think there's a ink, yeah, spray ink. You know, there's a lot of typically what you'd expect for squid creature stuff. And in general, their lore is also super milquetoast, but that is fine. Yeah. In that they're almost completely assimilated with the Vesk, and they just view yeah. themselves as just squiddy Vesk. They're like,
that's
yep,
great.
Hey, we're here. And they're like, yeah, we found like history of ours, and yeah, it's cool, but like we're still here, y'all. We've been together, we're cool.
What did you think of the lore behind Invoke the Leviathan, the 17th level feat?
Invoke the Leviathan. I thought that was more interesting than coming back from the dead.
I thought it was funny because it talks about how like transforming into a Leviathan is that last stage of life where they become the balloons that release their babies into the ocean. Mm-hmm. And you can use it. You could just be like, oh, this is typically how we would make babies, but I'm going to kill you with my baby balloon form.
It's kind of weird, but it's fine. It's fun. Not that I say I don't like the 17th level not dead feats. Like, I like the one from the Medro Sarai, but like it's just more interesting. Also, the grabber stance, you get a lot more grappling stuff. So if you wanted to go into combat maneuvers, the squid people are good at combat maneuvers, surprising no one.
Whoa, with all those tentacles, no way.
And having a beak and all that stuff, you can give them toxic beak and stuff.
Yeah. So for mine, Brunari are one of my favorites. I played a Brunari in Signal of Screams. So I was like, oh, let me see this. And Brunari, they're Brunari. It's great. You know, one of the things I like about this entry is that this one seeds a couple of the fact that like their planet has other sapient species on it, which is always nice to hear. It means we could see more options in the future. It talks a little bit about like their empathetic abilities, where like one of the things it talks about is they can sense emotional shifts in other people, but it has a downside in that they can sense like when other people are in pain. so they're so psychically in tune that when other people are physically hurting, like they oh, it's like not good for them.
Yeah, so if you find a Brunari like doctor in like a hospital, you know that they're either too empathetic for their own good or just a sociopath.
Right, they've kind of. I imagine that Raka, my Brunari, probably like went through something like that by the end, where she was like, she was definitely on the verge of being sociopathic by the end of that adventure. Like,
give me your pain.
Yeah, kind of. I like how one of the things it talks about is it talks about like community structures and like. Brunari will pair for like marriage and like relationships and stuff, but then those pairs will connect into what's called a mesopod, which is like a smaller subset of their community. And it talks about it's usually fewer than 10 groups, but like the biggest level of organization in their pod consists of nearly 12,000 Brunaris, which is great. Love that. Give me all those little otter people. So good. And when we talk about the different heritages they have, you know, you have like things like bioluminescent. Your Brunari can glow in the dark, which is hilarious. I love it. And there's like talk about like being an ambassador, which means you can go, you're part of like the ambassador corps and you're trained in diplomacy, which is cool. Maybe you have claws. There's like a couple options that have like actual activated abilities. Like Pod Brunari has like the empathetic assistance ability, where you basically have the ability to like hold other people in your psychic pod and like comfort them. If they're frightened, it makes them like less scared. So you just be this happy little guy who hugs people and makes everyone better. Or you could just be a Reef Brunari. And then it says like if a creature would deal damage to you with a critical strike, you could blink your quote big wet eyes at the creature, forcing them to pull back on their attack.
Too pathetic to kill.
It is like too pathetic to kill. There's a lot of really funny options. Like one of them is that you have an armpit pocket, which is basically like cheek pockets for your Soki, but it's your armpits, which is funny. And it also, if you stick something in your armpit, it's specifically protected from water damage.
Oh, that is important.
That's useful.
Yeah.
And there's like, you can make like a community raft as one of your feet where like you lock allies with other creatures. And when characters are interacting, like you can swim at half speed and it lets other people swim with you essentially, which is actually pretty useful in aquatic campaign, in my opinion.
Because most people don't like being good at swimming.
No, like me. I hate being good at swimming. Except some of the times when I'm okay at swimming, but good? No, never. And you have like the personal trinket option where you have like a favorite rock or a stuffed animal, and then that trinket gives you like a will saving throw bonus against fear, which is very first edition Starfinder. There's just a lot of really funny things. Like there's an ability called Soft Paw, Sharp Claw, which is refers to ambassadors switching between good cop, bad cop, essentially. Which is very funny. I like that.
I don't know.
Listen, but when you pick up Brunary, are you expecting to hear an ability at 13th level that you get called Alarming Scream, where you can just scream and enemies around you have to make a will saving throw or they become frightened and maybe even deafened because you scream so loud?
That's just, I mean, sure.
Yeah, it's great. It's very funny. I love this ancestry. It's really funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting.
Yeah. Now, I'd say we got time about one more left each. I think for mine, I'm going to pick N2 Colony. Do you have one you want to talk about?
I was going to just go to the versatile heritage for the android there.
Yo, okay. I'll do Entoid Colony then, and then we can move to the last section, which is those. Sure. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay. So N2 Colony are another one that come to us from Starfinder First Edition. Basically, so and the art shows like squawks infected with like mushrooms and rotten shit, part of like their faces decayed away. When you're playing an N2 Colony, you're not playing that corpse thing. You're playing the fungi that infests it and moves it around. You're basically the fungus in that ant that like takes over the ant's body and makes it get eaten to produce its life cycle, except you kind of zombify a critter. Which is interesting. Now, there is an option for a heritage where you're hostless, meaning you do not have a creature that you are infecting like that. You get an ability called Tactical Symbiosis, where you can merge yourself with an adjacent willing creature that you can speak to with your telepathy. And you basically, you can take your own turns as normal, but you occupy the target space, can't take actions with the moves trait. You move with them because you're merged into them. And it says for each speed you possess, compare that to your target speed. If your speed is faster or they lack that speed, they gain your speed. And then the target gains any of your N2 ancestry feats while you're merged, except those that require being hostless. So it's pretty funny. It says you each take your own turns, but basically you are essentially mounting on that person, but they can use your stats if they're better.
Mm.
Yeah, for like specific things. I also really like how a lot of the heritage feats are like specifically about different types of creatures that they commonly merge with from their home world. So there's one of them where you're merged with a freshwater amphibian from the planet Saruk 5. There's one where you are merged with a bat, a kind of like a creature that looks like a bat. And one of them is that you are merged with a squawk. Enjoy, you are a squawk guy.
Yeah.
And the options for this ancestry are really cool. A lot of them are like really creepy fungi stuff, like consume decay or releasing a spore cloud that dazzles your opponents. Yeah, it's very Last of Us. You can allow your spores to spread and entangle people in your mycelium network. You can like merge yourself with tech, and there's like an option where your fungi spores kind of like allow you to like engulf whatever you are in like infesting in like a creature, and you basically you cast the plant form spell to transform into like a thing, but like your fungi like wraps into the thing what you're transforming into. It's pretty cool. But you know, you said that the reason I wanted to bring up the N2 colony, because you said that this book has a lot of options where you just suddenly come back from being dead, right? What if I told you that the N2 colony have an ability where their host can kill itself for your benefit?
Well, that's interesting.
It's called Host's Final Gift. So it says, if you're reduced to 0 hit points and regain the dying condition, and you have a willing host, in a final act of bravery and gratitude, your host can basically prevent you from dying and take the brunt of whatever it would cause you to die. So basically, you regain hit points equal to 68 plus half your level. And you then lose the benefits of your heritage and any ancestry feats that require it until you acquire a new host, because your host is dead.
Hmm.
Which is pretty interesting. I like that.
Yeah, that's a lot to deal with when you die. Like, suddenly you have to worry about a new, like, how your sheet works.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, having to use this in multiple combats and just, like, all of these little critters decide, I'm going to save you. No, not again.
This keeps happening.
Yeah. This just keeps happening. All right. Let's talk about the ancestries now.
You mean the versatile heritages?
Yeah, those ones.
Yeah. So the xenometric android, that's the android that is just you're something else and you're an android. They gave art of it, of a dinosaur guy that I forget. He looked like something that was very familiar. Now it's evading me here. But it's like an android, but with less android feats, but also with other android feats. The biggest, most notable one is the homebrew core, lineage, where you can change your size. You're going to be a medium halfling if that does it for you, or a medium Izalgun, or you can go up to large or down to small. You can change one size category. Some are more magic. They give the ability to do other stuff magically. And some give you more feats. Like, in general, a lot of it is just giving a body more androidy bits. While a fair amount of the stuff is unique from the other android, in mechanic and flavor, it's very similar to the original android stuff.
Yes.
In general, you can still play whatever you want and just go, yeah, I'm an android that looks like a Patra. Or you can take this whole thing and really, really lean into that fiction.
Yeah,
like the hard light stuff and all that. So, like, it's I think in general it's pretty well written. It's something I feel players already did, but it is an option that I think people were looking for. So
yeah, I think even though you could just kind of flavor it however you want, it's kind of nice to have an official option.
Yeah.
That's
where I'm at.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. It makes me wonder whether there's a universe where the whole android could have just been like one versatile heritage, but also it's probably best that it works the way it does, because then you could have like traditional androids like be their own thing, and then this is specifically for ones that look like other species.
Yeah, I mean, also it's coming from Pathfinder 1E, right, where androids were a thing and you had their whole lineage already. So I do like that. I do like the original show of that people group. So
yeah, definitely. So mine, I like I said, I really think that the gap touch is really interesting, and I just want to like read the first sentence that like the first two sentences that got me hooked. Most people believe the gap, the history erasing cataclysmic mystery, ended over 300 years ago and simply erased historic records. Gap touch individuals live a strange truth that even they struggle to understand. And then the next line after that is just a random string of like text and syllables, as if the entire book itself had been redacted by some force. Many gap touch try to spread this fact to the wider galaxy, but they inexplicably fail to communicate it and often forget about it themselves for long stretches of time. But the harder they try to explain it to people, write it down, illustrate it, or understand it, the more confusion is inflicted upon those who would try to perceive it. For a gap touch, the gap isn't just ancient history or missing time, it's their present and their future, even if no one else notices or believes their struggle against it. I love that pitch. That is so cool. It is so cool. And then, like, you read from there, the gap touch heritage is basically you get the gap touch trait in addition to standard traits, and you can select gap touch feats. And you also gain the additional lore general feat for gap lore, which is like, oh, okay, so this is what we're doing, you know? And they have a small list of standardized ancestry feats, which is pretty cool. And the feats themselves, there's a lot of fun ones. Like, there's one where you just like have random languages that you shouldn't know, and like you have like glitching memories, like things bob and weave in and out of your memory. There's a couple things that give you, like, there's like, you can do this at bigger ranges and you have a fading presence, you gather information, but just because you're so good at having to pick up, like, it's like a weird combination. The entire ancestry is like a weird combination of like Adam Sandler's girlfriend in My 51st Dates mixed with this Cassandra, the Oracle. Yeah. Essentially.
Yeah. Also, like, a lot of there's a fair amount of stuff that involves just being in and out of time as far as options, like the Anomalous Provenance lineage, where your step action gains the teleport trait and allows you to step into difficult terrain.
Yeah.
And also just like you, when your steps, it can enhance to go to 10 feet and you just like appear and disappear once per minute. Also, you could just leave with pause button once a day for a round. So like, the bomb's gonna go off. I'm just not gonna be here for that time.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's cool and it's funny. I don't think that it's anything that really mechanically blew me away, but I'm interested to see how more options are added to it in the future. Because it feels like the kind of thing that if they wanted to like do more, like slowly revealing what the gap is, it would be a good place to add some cool gap feats to that option. Like, I like that it exists and that it's there and that we can play with it.
Yeah. Also, there it looks like there are some options to do like spring attacky type stuff using that teleport ability with moving around.
Yeah.
So like, you know, there's some stuff that I think is interesting there.
We do like cheating the universe, don't we?
Yeah.
All right. And then after that, it's traditional back matter. You got stuff like, you know, traits and like thanks and the orc license, and there you go.
Yeah, that's the book. I mean, I think it's very in-depth, and everything that's in there, I think I enjoy it greatly. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely. This book is the ancestry guide for Starfinder, hands down, both in terms of it having really great content and it just being a blast to read. Like, it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing more written about all the worlds that these ancestries are coming from and more like focus on these different peoples. And I'm also looking forward to seeing what really cool and exciting things they do with the standardized ancestry feat mechanic, because that mechanic is the greatest thing in this book. And I will fight anybody who says it's not the greatest thing to come out in like a mechanical sense from any Paizo book for at least 3 or 4 years. I'll fight you.
Man, that's you're gonna be on top of a mountain there. Just
listen. I won't be on top of a mountain yet. This book hasn't gone public yet. Like, its official release date is April 1st, which is in 2 days. So I imagine I'll be getting some phone calls requesting a fight soon, but I got 2 days off.
To start the mountain of bodies.
No, let's go. So James, is there anything you wish was in this book that wasn't?
I did have a species that I thought of earlier, but like, it's not in my head now.
Yeah. You know, there were a couple in there that I was like, somebody at Paizo must like this one, because I wouldn't have picked this one. Like, Novians were in it. And, like, maybe more people like Novians than I do, but, like...
That's me. I like Novians more than you do.
Do you? Yeah, okay, that's fair. I mean, it's not hard to like Novians more than me, but, yeah. Like, I don't hate them. They're just, like, they're very, like... A still water pond that has not been disturbed in 5,000 years to me. That is my feelings on Novians.
I think they're very fun and they're interesting in a unique way of, hey, this is kind of just like a weird thing.
I am glad that this book has something for everyone then, because I can find plenty of other things I would rather play in this book than a Novian. But, I don't hate that it's there.
Yeah, I mean, like, Morlamal, of course. That was thinking they're like...
Oh, yeah, Morlamal. Wow, Morlamal wasn't in this book. That's weird. They must have plans for Morlamal.
Yeah, yeah, I think based around society, maybe, but there has to be something. But yeah, that wasn't in there. It's like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, right? Dustin Knight wants to know, how can people find the stars without Novians? I question, doesn't your adventure end sooner because you found the star once you found the Novian? I'm going to let you hold on to that until next time when we go beyond with No Direction.